Here we go. We ready?
Yeah.
I guess.
Hey, guys.
I can taste that.
Welcome to M Vibes Podcast.
Home of good music,
good libations,
and good vibes. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of M Vibes Podcast. Don't know what episode number this is, so we'll just guess. And figure it out as we go. You know where we are just from the background if you're watching us on YouTube or on Spotify video. By the way, if you do listen to us on Spotify, the video comes along with it. I don't know if everyone already knows that. But we're at Tommy's Pub drinking, I guess. I've got my old... I lied to you. I don't have Old Faithful today. I got a whole lot of rosé, gluten-free coffee lager.
Liar.
From my friend over at Andy over at Armored Cow Brewing. So, yeah. And, of course, Jameson. So.
Nice.
Cheers. Tonight, or today, it's evening now, I guess. We have a very special guest. The man that makes this all possible for us to record here at Home Sweet Home's Tommy's Pub. We got Jamie Starks today on the show. So,
hello.
Honored to have you here, man.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What are you drinking, Jamie? What is this?
I have in my Manchester City mug.
No, nice.
Drinking.
Boo.
I'm drinking some Irish breakfast tea, but I also have here in my one-in-one... tied for first in the NFC North with the
Detroit Lions.
Yeah, yeah. So the Detroit Lions. I have an NA Guinness.
Nice.
It's very yummy. It's very creamy and fresh.
One of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast is not just because you're a cool-ass person. We need to talk about Tommy's and the history of Tommy's. I know that this wasn't the original location.
Right.
I had been to the other one, and people have told me about it. My friends who used to be in a band called 10-1-5,
yeah,
were doing a Clash cover band, and I went and saw them there at the old Tommy's.
Sure, yeah, Mike Bradley,
yep,
who's also who's from England, yeah, yeah.
And Ryan London. And all those guys, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
I went in there. I'm like, wow, this place is tiny, but then people, kept telling me about Tommy's. I'm like, Tommy's is small. They're like, no, have you been to the new one yet? I'm like, what new one? I didn't know about it, and then. I came here for a show with Mike Thrower. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure it was No Anger Control. That night. We went to go see Soul Coughing at the Visual Light. And he's like, hey, man, let's go over to Tommy's and go check out No Anger Control. I'm like, I thought Tommy's closed. He's like, no, man, let's go over to the new one. And we came in. I was like, wow, this place is awesome.
Yeah, Mike.
So what's the timeline?
So the original Tommy's was at 2007 Central Avenue.
Yep.
And it became Tommy's in 1977. But before that, Tommy's dad, Nick Harris, who is of a relation but not direct relation to the other Nick Harris who used to own the Double Door. Mm-hmm. It's like a second cousin, or I don't know, Jim Mack, who owned Tommy's when I worked for, worked at the old location. He told me the history basically of Tommy's, and he said, so Nick Harris bought the building in 1951, and he opened up Central Avenue Bar and Grill, and it predates the Penguin. Basically, the Penguin was open in 1952, and then the original Tommy's opened in 51. So he owned it for all those years. And I'm not sure when he passed, but Tommy ended up taking it over in 77 and changed the name to Tommy's Pub.
Okay.
And it's been that, it was that all the way until 2016 when we had to move out.
Were you guys close to the original Lunchbox records too, or is that not the same building?
Where was the original lunchbox?
It was right.
Oh, that was on the corner by the Dairy Queen.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, we were basically, if you know where, there's a 7-Eleven at Westover and Central.
Yep.
We were right across the street from that 7-Eleven.
Okay, all right.
It's now an apartment complex.
Okay.
Actually, a funny thing is.
It's funny. Everything is an apartment complex.
Yeah, I know. Everything in this city has become an apartment complex. But back in, like, 2020, I went to go get a COVID test in the little minute clinic that's inside of that apartment complex. And as I was standing there, I was looking out the door at the counter, and it's like, oh, this looks familiar. You know, this view of that gas station looks really familiar. So I said to the lady working the counter, I said, hey, do you mind if I, like, scoot over here and check it out from this angle? And she's like, sure. And she's looking at me weird. And I said, there's a reason for this. And I look and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. This is exactly the view that I had for years of that gas station through this window when it was a different window.
Wow.
So then I said to the lady, I said, sorry, I used to manage the bar that used to be here. And she goes, oh, Tommy's Pub. And I said, oh, you knew of us? She's like, no, but you know how many people come in here and say, hey, this is where Tommy's Pub used to be. And I'm like, that is awesome. I'm like, yes. Oh, I love that. That's great to know that, you know, people, you know, still remember where it used to be. It was a really special place. I mean, it was. it was a special place. It was really cool. So when I got there, it was 2007. And how I came about Tommy's Pub is not an accident. It was a meeting that I had. I met Tom. Tommy. Yeah, right. I met Jim Mack, who owned Tommy's Pub at the time, at the Double Door Inn.
Okay.
I used to work right next to it.
Landmark of town. That is gone. Yeah.
That is gone. You know, and here's the thing, really quick on that. Like, you know, people would be upset when they talk about the Double Door Inn and, you know, oh, Nick sold it. Da, da, da. You know what? I don't blame the guy. I really don't, because, you know, it's
Tremont.
Like.
Tremont.
Well, you know what? I mean, yeah, and that's the problem with this city isn't the people that own those buildings selling out. You know, because, you know, Nick Harris was, you know, how old was it? You know, was he when he sold out? It's like, what do you expect him to go on until, you know, his last dying breath, you know, operating a place? Look, you know what? Nobody was coming along buying that place for, you know, the value of what they, you know, what it was worth. You know what? It's unfortunate. I hate it. I hate seeing that the Double Door got knocked down.
Yeah.
I mean, trust me, if I could have afforded it, I would have bought it. But, you know, I ain't got any money. So.
Yeah.
You know, and the only people that were going to give Nick, you know, what he... Nick bought it in 1973 and made the second longest running blues bar in this country. So, you know, he did his part. He, you know what? And shame on the city for not acknowledging that and saying, look, this is a landmark. We need to save it.
Absolutely.
You know, we're in a city where...
Absolutely, correct.
The city didn't care. So, you know, the city's like, we don't give a shit about any of this.
This city does not care about history whatsoever.
No.
When after I moved here, and, you know, and I'm not trying to knock Charlotte because, you know, obviously I'm not from here. Well, you know, you're not either.
None of us are.
None of us.
Okay, Chicago, Wisconsin, Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. So, I mean, I'm not trying to shit talk Charlotte because I love this city. I loved it more when I first came here. And I'm starting to not like, and I haven't liked for a while, what's been going on here. And there is no historical preservation here. They don't care. And it was a shame. Like, you know, 15 years ago, there was a thing saying, hey, what should Charlotte City slogan be? And I submitted.
Knock shit down.
You know what? Well, I submitted Charlotte. You know, we hate history. Because, you know, it's kind of true. It's like this city doesn't care one bit about anything historic. Like, they just don't care. There's no history here. And that's a sad thing. It's because if you live in a city or a town or whatever, and they understand their history, and they appreciate their history, and they preserve their history, and they teach their history, well, then there's culture. That's where culture comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Here, It's like we have a lack of culture. Our culture is, you know, dudes walking around with, you know, khaki shorts and a polo shirt, you know, and going to, like, you know, one of the 90 breweries. And, you know, and we have great breweries in the city. I love and support the breweries that I do support. But you know what? There's some of them that are like mega breweries that, you know, it's like the whole half the city goes to them. And it's like, that's your culture?
Yeah.
This is it? This is our culture?
You're right.
I'm a sports guy. I love sports. But it's like, if it's not sports related and drinking related, there's nothing in this city. Right. It's not getting the support.
Charlotte preserves churches and signs.
Yeah.
So you'll see signs move somewhere else to be put up, like JFG Coffee and Queen Park Social, and churches, which become art galleries. But that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even that church in Plaza Midwood didn't stand a chance. They knocked that thing down. It was a
1910
church.
Yeah.
Everything I loved about Charlotte when I first moved to Charlotte is gone now.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's all gone.
I agree.
Yeah.
Price's chicken coop, gone.
Yes.
Greens is gone.
Yes.
That just happened.
Well, Greens moved.
Yeah.
And then it's gone.
Fat City's gone. And
yep.
That was one of the first music venues in town. That was gone to build the condos there.
Yep.
But they still, I think they still call those condos Fat City.
I think they do.
Yeah. I'll never forget it.
Well, fortunately, I mean, Tremont's gone, but in Double Door. But fortunately, you know, Tommy's moved. Amos's South End moved.
Yeah.
So there's a sliver of hope.
The amount of shows in town and what the Fillmore and Thunderground has done to prices for shows is ridiculous.
Well, that's why I like Neighborhood Theater.
Yeah.
I mean, Neighborhood Theater has been there for...
And, I mean, Tommy's.
Yeah. No, well, I mean Neighborhood Theater has been in that building for
a long time. And during COVID, they almost lost it.
Yeah.
But they actually went through and they rebuilt the stage and they redid the lights.
Right.
Yeah.
All during COVID, and they came back, and I was like, wow, this place is great.
Yeah, we've seen some great shows at Neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
I've only seen one show at the Underground. And you know what? And I hate being one of those, like, man, I'm so about, like, my beliefs and standing for what I believe in.
Yeah.
You know, that I just don't like the structure of the Underground and, you know, the Fillmore and all that. You know, it's so corporate. It's just so, I mean,
it is.
I get it. Like, you know what? I sound like a hypocrite because I enjoy some things that are corporate.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, like, the thing that bothers me is what they've done to different local musicians and local bands. You know, the whole, like, pay to play. You find out that, we're going to book you, but you have to sell so many tickets. And if you don't sell those tickets, then you got to buy them. So you're basically paying to play.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on.
That's bullshit.
Well, you know what? But at the same time, you know, it's like, I know some bands that have done that, and I felt bad for them. But it's like, well, you know what? You want to play with the big boys. This is the big boy games. This is what the big boys do to you.
Right.
You know, I mean, I tell all bands and all musicians, I'm like, look, go find yourself a brewery gig. Take all their yuppie money, you know what, and then come back to our little bars and play our little bars for, you know, for half the price. You know what? I mean,
you will have an audience here.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
Is, you know what, you go to the brewery, you know how many musicians and bands I know that have played breweries and they've come back and said to me, man, I'm so disheartened. You know why? Because nobody cared one bit that we were there. Right. They didn't care that. You know, we were playing there. Nobody really turned around to watch us. Nobody paid any attention to us. Nobody clapped. Nobody talked to us afterwards.
You were the ambience.
Yeah, exactly. You're just a background noise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's okay. You know what? Go take all their money, and you can pay your bills, and then you come and play for your $150 here at Tommy's.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
With the people who want to come see you.
With the people who want to see you and are going to be hooting and hollering and having a good time
with
you.
Absolutely.
You know?
And that's one of the reasons why I love Tommy's.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, when did you start booking shows?
So, So 2007, I like I said, I met Jim Mack, and that's Jim McNally, and you know, rest him, you know, rest his soul. Jim was a big influence in my life since I've been here in Charlotte. We lost Jim, and it was the day after my birthday in 2020, November 5th.
And during COVID.
During COVID.
Wow.
He didn't die from COVID. He died from cancer. You know, Jim was like a dad to me. Jim was, I mean, I got so many great, you know, Jim Mack stories. It's funny. And, you know, anybody who knew him, like, they have their own stories. And I mean, he was a hell of a man. You know, and he's the reason why Tommy's is here right now, and reason why I kept it going. So I met Jim in 2007, one day at the Double Door having lunch, and I was sitting at the bar next to him, and he was wearing this shirt. It was a Tommy's Pub shirt, a polo shirt, and it had checkerboard print along the collar. And I'm like, hey, I'm like, I see you got checkerboard print on, you know, on your collar. And he's like, oh yeah, this is the bar that I own. And, you know, I'm into racing and da, 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 da. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, yeah, me too. Because I moved from Wisconsin. And I was racing at my local racetrack in Lake Geneva. And I do short track stock car racing. And I said, man, that's cool. I just moved here from Wisconsin. I'm into racing too. So we struck up a conversation, and, you know, he kept on saying to me, hey, you need to, you know, I'd see him repetitively. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd see him a couple times a week, whatever. We'd just sit and shoot the shit, and he's like, eventually, yeah, you got to come to my bar, check out my bar, Tommy's Pub, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I don't drink, you know, I haven't drank since 98. That's not my thing. It's not my scene. Yeah. He's like, no, come by and check out. Like, I got some old racing stuff on the walls and, you know, meet some of the regulars and blah, blah, blah. So one day I got done with work early. I was working right by Double Door for a college bookstore. It was an independent college bookstore. We served CPCC. So I got done early one day and I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to go over and check out Jim's place. Why not? You know, I'll go over there and have a Coke. So I go over there. Actually, I had a hard time finding it, like most people did their first time going to the old Tommy's, because you blink your eye going down Central and you miss it. So, you know, I stopped in this parking lot, in this gravel parking lot off of Central, and I called Nick Karras up from the Double Door, and I said, Nick, I said, hey, where's Jim Mack's bar at? And he gave me this address. I don't see it anywhere. And he goes, you know, and Nick was another character. I mean, Nick's awesome. Nick's funny. He's like, where in the hell are you? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm in some gravel parking lot. He's like, well, is it by a gas station? I said, yeah, I'm like across the street from at the time, I think it was a Quick Trip or not a Quick Trip, a Circle K or something like that. And he said, well, look at the building that's in that parking lot. And I looked, and sure enough, it was that Tommy's Pub sign right there on the wall. It was on the corner of the building. I'm like, oh, there it is. I said, okay, yeah, I guess I'm parked right out in front of it. So so I go in, and it's just like a scene from a movie. Honest to God, it was like the music stopped. I mean, the music didn't stop, but it felt like the music stopped, but everybody looked at me. I opened up that door.
You hear the record, like, scratch.
Yeah, it was like the record. And so I opened up the door, and it was like because this ray of light got shot through, like right on the patrons sitting at the bar. And they all look like, who in the hell is this? And I'm walking along, and I'm looking at people looking at me. And I'm just like, and then I see Jim pop his head like, hey, Jamie, I'm over here. And I'm like, oh, hey, all right, Jim, hey, how's it going? So I go over there and start shooting shit with him. You know, hey, I'm glad you made it, blah, 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 blah. So let me show you around. Yeah, I mean, he gave me the grand tour of Tommy's Pub, which like was basically 12 steps in a square. You know, I just went to like 12 steps in a square, and that was it. God, I missed that, but that place was awesome. And so he said, "Well, here, one of the reasons why I wanted you here is because I want to sponsor your race car." And I said, "Cool. Are you kidding?" I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" I said, Jim, you don't even really know me. We've had a few conversations. He's like, I know you're good people. I can sense good people. I want to sponsor your car because I believe in you. And I'm like, that's really cool. Like, you know how, like, I had won races back home and I was trying to pull teeth, you know, to get sponsorship mm-hmm. on my car. Like, to get anybody to put their name on my car and give me some money, it was a hassle. And here, this guy doesn't even know me. I don't even have my race car here yet. It's still up in Wisconsin. I'm like, hey, I don't even have a car here yet. And he's like, doesn't matter. He's like, you get your car here, I'm going to sponsor you. So I got the car down here. Jim sponsored me and came out to every single one of the races out at East Lincoln Speedway. I was running dirt that year. Finished second in points, you know, for the season. So that was pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
And during that, right after that season, I'd lost my job. The business had been sold out. So I had to find myself a new job. Jim was losing his two bartenders. One was getting married and having a kid. The other one moving out of state. And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I need some help here. He's like, could you help me out? And I'm like, oh. Now, granted, I grew up in restaurants. You know, I was 14 when I became a dishwasher, the kitchen bitch, as it was called.
Me too, yeah.
Yep. So I grew up in service industry. I worked as a bartender in another bar back home. I did all that, waited tables. I did all of it. You know, and the last thing I wanted to do was go back to work in a bar. I really didn't. I had no interest in it. I didn't want to. I didn't care for it. And I said, you know what, Jim? Yes, I will help you out. Because you know what? It's not because I felt like I owed it to him, because I did, but because I really wanted him to, you know, to be okay. I wanted his business to be all right. You know, that's what Jim had in life was the bar. Just like me. That's the biggest thing I have in life that I own is this bar. You know, it's the most, that's it. I don't even own a home. I don't have anything else. I got this bar. So, yeah, I started bartending. And one of the guys that was a local country musician said, hey, we'd like to do an open mic here. So he started hosting an open mic. And, you know, it started gaining. People started coming. Mm-hmm. But then we went through, like, hosts here, hosts there. But people were coming up. Musicians were like, hey, can we book a show here? So I started out with one of those little small note tablets, you know, the little tiny ones,
yeah.
The ones with the spiral across the top. So I started out in one of those, writing down name. Like, what's your band's – what did you say your band's name is? Oh, okay, these people, and you want to do what date? Oh, yeah, that date, and we'll start it at that time. And that's how I started booking shows. Just because people said, hey, can we book a show here? A lot of those shows in those very early days, like 10, 15 people may show up.
Yeah.
You know what? And that's including the people that were there anyway. You know? So, but it was fine. It was just like, oh, this is cool. And then Jim was like, man, that's cool. Live music. Because Jim had a music history past. His uncle, I want to say is Ray Phillips. I feel really bad. I can't remember. I think it's Joe Ray Phillips, was his uncle who wrote a bunch of songs with Dixie Dean and Tom T. Hall in Nashville.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Jim would see him playing at the Opry on Saturday nights. Like, he had pictures of him and his uncle.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, at the Opry, hanging out. Like, his uncle, you know, he said his uncle played one time for Johnny Cash, that Johnny Cash called him up and said, hey, I need a bass player. Can you play bass?
Yeah.
He said, sure, yeah. Oh, yeah, I play bass. So, okay, well, I need you to come to New York and fill in.
Oh, wow.
So Jim said his uncle didn't play a lick of bass. He said, so he basically, you know, brushed up. He borrowed somebody's bass that he knew, and he brushed up on some, you know, bass. Doom, 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 doom. And he said he went to New York and played this show. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, he just turned the bass down a little bit, and he just kind of blended in.
It just goes along with the rhythm.
He just went along with it. Yeah, so, I mean, I love that story when Jim told me that. I was like, man, that's awesome. So Jim had this music history pass, and Jim wrote some songs with some friends of his that were local here, and they had a radio show called The Lakers Show, I think it was called. So anyway, so they did some stuff on that, and so Jim was really happy, like, you know, oh wow, my bar's got live music going on. So then eventually, I don't know who it was. I don't know who the first ones were in the Charlotte punk scene that were basically like, hey, would you be up for hosting some punk shows? I'm like, sure, why not? You know mm-hmm. what? I mean, we're gonna be open to anything. So yeah. We started, you know, hosting punk shows. Jim was like, hey, look, you know, I'm just going to leave when this stuff starts, because that's not my thing. So he would. He'd take off and leave it to us to go ahead and have a show. And And it worked out really well. I mean, that's basically how it started. I went from that little tiny tablet to a bigger notepad, and then finally to a calendar, which I still to this day I use pencil and a calendar.
Really?
Yeah. Everything I do is in a calendar.
You are on top of that shit, because every week I see you post, and it's got a million shit on there, but the dates, and he tags the bands and the date and everything. It's fucking awesome.
Well, I believe you have to, because you know what? I mean, you know, as much as I, you know what? We lost somebody in the music scene about a month and a half ago. His name was Zach Moss. And, you know, Zach was really, really instrumental in those early days of the 2000, I'd say about 2012, somewhere around there, 2012, 2013, maybe. You know, we've been doing music for, you know, at least 5 years. And I remember the first time I met Zach, because I didn't know what to think of him. He sat at the bar. He was quiet. He wasn't unfriendly. He was just quiet. And I remember him saying, he was there for an open mic. And I don't even know which host was. We went through so many different hosts at that point. He said, "Look, you know what? I'm trying to get my foot in the Charlotte music scene. I'm a musician. If you ever want to host, you know what? I'd love to have a shot at it." And so I was like, "You know what? Yeah. You know what? A couple of weeks later or so, I called him up and I said, "You want to come host? Come on. You know what? I need a solid host." And I'll be damned. That dude, he brought it. I mean, Tommy's Pub open mics, when he was hosting back in those days, he would have, it was called the fucking list. And he'd put it out, and, you know, the sign-up sheet was called the fucking list. And honest to God, it would be filled up. Like, it got to the point where he'd say, somebody come in and try to sign up on the list after 10 o'clock, he'd pull it. Really? He's like, there's no way you're going to get out. You're not going to play tonight. There'd be like literally 40, 50 people signed up. It was crazy. It was absolutely insane. In that little place, we'd have that many people show up for an open mic.
Wow.
Oh, no, it was by far the greatest open mic. And so the point being on this is, and it was, yes, Tommy's Pub was where it was hosted, but it was a reflection of Zach. You know, it was Zach brought that. I didn't bring it. Tommy's Pub didn't bring that. Zach brought that. He started that. And from there, there's like a million bands that came out of that open mic. I mean, the boys from Gonzo, they moved from Cleveland. They came there and they started playing around here because they got a start at the Tommy's Pub open mic, meeting people and, you know, networking. Mercury Dimes came out of it. I'm kind of going in a brain loss, but a bunch of bands really got their start and they started networking and it became this whole scene. Like this scene basically grew out of Tommy's Pub and it was awesome. I mean, those days, at that time, I did realize it, but I didn't realize, you know, I knew something was going on, but I didn't realize on what big of a scale it was. And it was, you know, looking back, I'm like, that is really cool. And, you know, and it had nothing to do with me. I mean, I was just there and Zach did it. Zach was the one that promoted. And so from that point, I've always believed if I'm going to book a band, you know, I'm going to give them everything I can to help make their show a success. You know, it's the least I could do. You're going to come play at my bar. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I want my bar to do well, so I'm going to promote selfishly on my end. But I really want your band to do well.
Yeah.
I want, you know, people to come here. I want them to, you know, I want as many people to come and see you play. And then when you go to play at another place, I'm hoping that people will go see you there and you'll build a bigger crowd, because by the time you circle back around to Tommy's again after four or five other shows, hopefully the crowd doubles. You know, it's like this whole thing. It's like people don't, I think some people don't understand this. Like, you know, I'm not in competition with any other, you know, venue. Because, I mean, I don't really consider, I mean, yeah, we're a venue, but we're not. We're a local bar. But, you know, it's like, you know, I love Snug Harbor. I love Milestone.
Yeah.
You know what? I think it's a shame, you know, all the whatever's happened over at Skylark, you know, and unfortunately Marissa's not over there booking shows. Because we really needed that. We really, you know, the city's punk scene. Because we're not like the punk home anymore. I mean, you know, the Milestone used to be it. Then we kind of became it. Skylark kind of took that over. And it was a good place. It was a good place for, you know, the younger punk scene to go. Because, you know, to be honest, we're getting older here. You know, and it's like, I'll still book punk shows. But I'm not attuned to the younger scene. You know, and that's something I've been trying to, like, look into, and I'm trying to research and find out, hey, who's this young punk scene and who are the young musicians scene, to try to keep, you know, the blood flowing, you know, in this music scene.
I don't think I've ever seen a show here that wasn't punk, though.
We do a lot of metal. Yeah. Cult Fracture.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, our friends that just walked by from a Cult Fracture.
Yeah.
Love those guys. Actually, we saw them. We hung out with them
in
Manchester.
Quite a few genres here, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like last week, we had a, you know, kind of a folky type of show. We kind of like a raw folk. Some people call it, you know, folk punk, and it's kind of that way, but it's like raw rock, raw folk. But yeah, I mean, we do, you know, the metal. I mean, Storm Watchers. I love them. Absolutely love them.
Wasn't there a DJ that came in and spun ska all day long one day too?
There was. There was this guy. Yeah, some guy. What was his name?
I don't know his name.
Eric.
He sucks though.
Eric. No, that was terrible. That was awesome. No, Scott.
That is the worst DJ I've ever heard.
I know. Dude, I was trying to play because Jeremy had the Stand Down Margaret drink on the menu.
Yeah.
So I put on Stand Down Margaret, and the fucking thing started skipping. I'm like, oh, shit. It's not even scratched. I'm like, damn it. Oh, well.
Oh, Margaret stood down.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least you got my request right.
Which one was that?
Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Superman.
I actually had more to play, but whatever. That's okay.
I love that. I mean,
next year.
Yes.
Maybe. Anyways, sorry. I didn't.
No. Yeah. So we did. We had a DJ, Eric?
Some guy who hosts the podcast.
Yeah, so that guy. Yeah. So, anyway, I don't even know.
DJ M-Vibes.
Yeah. DJ M-Vibes.
I really need to come up with the DJ name. I really do.
Yeah, you do.
Everyone's like, what's your DJ name? I don't have one. I'm sorry. I'll have to come up with one.
Detroit, you know, you get DJ Motor.
I can do that. I'm trying to do like a twist on vinyl, because that's all I spend. I had a person ask me to do a wedding. I'm like, you know, I spend all vinyl, right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I have nothing new.
Which is great.
Yeah, I'm like, it's all older stuff. They're like, well, that's right up our alley. How about country? I'm like, I got some Johnny Cash. That's about it. Yeah.
You know, women were a big part of my upbringing. I mean, obviously,
mine too.
Mom.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I lived in a home. I grew up in a house with my mom, my nan, my dad, my uncle, and then my uncle's wife. Mm-hmm. And then eventually my sister came along. But, I mean, I was always with, if I wasn't with, you know, my parents, I was always with my nan. And my nan's, you know, she's still to this day, she's going to be 91 this year, you know, knock on wood. So, but I was always with her, and she's got this, you know, and everybody loved my Nan, and they still do. And she's like, I swear to God, she has friends everywhere. She can go anywhere in the world, and she, somebody knows her. It's just one of those weird things. And she's got this, you know, sweet little English accent. And, you know, when I was a kid, like, you know, family would come from England. Everybody want to, hey, we want to hear what your family sounds like, you know, and all this kind of shit. But anyway, so I would hear music all the time, like with my Nan. My Nan loved Fats Domino.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, that was like, that's still like her guy. She loves Fats Domino. And, you know, my mom was, we always had music playing. My mom was always big into the English invasion, you know, the British invasion bands, you know, Dave Clark Five and, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers, Beatles, Kinks, Stones, you know, Who, all that, you know, she was big into all that. And then my, but it was always Sundays were cleaning day in the house. And my mom and my Nan would always listen to Patsy Cline.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, that was the only country that my mom likes was Patsy Cline. And, you know, and that's one of those things where there's another artist that is called country. But I think it's one of those things where, I mean, I don't, I'm trying not to say that.
It transcends a genre.
It transcends a genre, right.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, that's one of the things that I that's why I don't knock the Taylor Swift thing.
Yeah.
Is because if it's empowering younger girls, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm all about it. I really am. I think that's awesome. And if it encourages younger girls, you know, to get involved with music and we see more, you know, women involved in music, because yeah, that's great. Because yeah. I heard Patsy Cline as a kid all the time on Sundays while cleaning around the house, and I liked it. And I always liked Patsy Cline. And, you know, and it was one of those things that it was like, that was like a bond between my Nan and my mom, was the Patsy Cline being played. And, you know, but yeah, some music was always a big part of my upbringing.
Mine too.
You know, my dad likes all, I mean, he likes all kinds of stuff. When I was actually the youngest, the first memory of music I have is when I was probably 3 or 4 years old. And my uncle, his room was basically the attic upstairs of this old house that we lived in. And his room was, it always scared me because he had the black light. And he had those. This was, you know.
I think everyone had an uncle with a black light in his room.
Well, 19, you know, this is like 1975, yeah. 76, whatever. And he had those, you know, the neon glow in the dark black light posters and Black Sabbath. Yeah. I mean, I just remember him listening to Black Sabbath and him always singing, I am Iron Man. You know, that's like. That's pretty much my earliest memory of music. But I mean, then it was, you know, my dad loved Van Morrison, Johnny Rivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, he also, my dad got into like some metal, like, you know, Ozzy, you know, grew up hearing Ozzy. I grew up, you know, hearing him playing, like, you know, the Southern rock stuff, 38 Special, ZZ Top, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's more of the blue collar kind of, you know, type of music. But it was I liked it. I always liked what my dad liked and I liked what my mom liked. But then
I think that's something that's changed here as of late. Like when I was a kid, I'm sure when you were a kid, too, when you drove somewhere, you listened to the music that your parents wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, the parents are like, oh, let's turn on something for the kids. First of all. I'm going to say it now. Most of the shit my kids like sucks.
Yeah.
Especially my oldest kid. And I'll
my parents thought the same thing about my music.
I know, Well, it was funny. I'll never forget my mom. I was like, can we listen to Metallica? And we listened to one, and she goes, why can't they do this in like a Bruce Springsteen type of thing? That doesn't have to be so heavy. I'm like, sorry, Mom.
Well, that's another guy. My dad loves Bruce. Like, you know what? And I didn't care for Bruce Springsteen back in those days. And now I'll tell you what, I have absolute respect for him. I think that he is absolutely great because I didn't realize what he was singing about when I was a kid. I didn't realize that he was basically singing.
Talking about the American working man.
Absolutely. You know what? Yeah.
I saw him on Broadway. He did that whole thing.
No way.
And it was funny. He's like, he says, you know, I've sang about the American working man my whole life. He goes, I'm a fucking fraud. He's like, I haven't had a steady job until right now. Every night on Broadway, he goes, I fucking hate it. That was awesome.
But, I mean, that Bruce was another one that I heard a lot of growing up. But, you know, so my babysitter when I was a kid, I remember it was 1981, I guess, 82. I guess it'd have to be 82. So I was like 9 years old. And he was 16, and he'd come over and babysit for me and my sister, who was basically at that time like a year and a half old. My parents worked the third shift in the factory, so we needed a babysitter and somebody to get us off to or get me off to school in the morning, like get me up and kick my ass out the door. I remember my first cassette that I had was Def Leppard's "On Through the Night." And that was the first cassette that I owned. And it was like 1981 or 82 or whatever year that came out. And, you know, and that basically, that kind of changed my life because now all of a sudden I had my own music. Because before it was my parents' music.
Right.
So now all of a sudden I have this band that my parents don't listen to. This is my music. And then from that, it went on to Iron Maiden. And Maiden is always going to be one of my top five favorite bands. I love Iron Maiden. I mean, I had the posters on the wall, the shirts. I mean, Iron Maiden was really my break.
Didn't you make a Tommy shirt, like hockey shirt?
I do. Yes, very much Iron Maiden font.
Yeah,
the Maiden font with a knockoff Eddie.
Yeah,
you know, as a hockey.
I was gonna say, did it have Eddie on it?
Yeah,
it has Eddie on it, but it's a knockoff Eddie. It's not really Eddie. It's not really Eddie.
You can't really
copyright.
Copyright. Yeah, but that's why it was a knock. It's a knockoff Eddie. So, and it's not the same exact font.
Eli,
EMI or BMI or whoever's listening in on
there
this. It's Eli. So, you know, Iron Maiden was that became. My thing was a little bit of a leg cramp.
Yeah, it happens in these chairs.
It happens sitting in these chairs. So Iron Maiden was my break away from completely from my parents because my dad didn't listen to Iron Maiden. He liked Ozzy. He liked Black Sabbath. That was his form of metal. This like power chord stuff, not his thing. You know, it was just too fast, too hard. He wasn't into it. You know, he wasn't going to jam to, you know, Die With Your Boots On. That wasn't going to be his thing, or, you know, The Number of the Beast. So, you know, and the funny thing is also, you know, those songs were about history, you know. And so, I grew up in a home where on the wall there were the plates of, you know, the Queen. And we had like the leather, there's these leather belts with brass buckles. It's like typical things you see in an English household, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like our house was very much like an English household because of my mom and my nan. And so, you know, growing up seeing the portrait of the Queen and the royal family and all that kind of stuff and, you know, having family from England and, you know, having that part of my life. And then there's Maiden. And they're singing about historical stuff, you know, and then especially the Power Slave album. My uncle gave me for Easter of 84, I think it was, he slipped into my Easter basket the Power Slave.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cassette. Oh, that's I'm awesome. Telling you, I was so excited. I got this G.I. Joe Jeep thing that I wanted. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. And then I started peeling things away, and then in my basket, there's, boom, Power Slave. I'm like, no way, I got Power Slave. You know, I was so excited.
That's awesome.
So, and then my mom's like, well, that was your uncle, you know, your Uncle John threw that into the basket. I'm like, yes. See,
everyone needs that one uncle that does that shit for them.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Mike Phillips talked about that. My Uncle Mario gave me my first two Alice Cooper records. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't know who Alice was at the time. He gave me Killer and Billion Dollar Babies. Yeah, exactly. And ever since then, I've been hooked on Alice Cooper. So, yeah.
That's no, awesome. That's, yeah. So, yeah. So then, so, and family in England, like one of my other uncles in England would send me model airplanes, Spitfires and whatever. And so I'd build Spitfire planes and all this stuff. And so it was like very English. Like my favorite sweets were from England. You know, half of my upbringing, you know, it's English. And, I'll tell you what made the big change was hearing the Sex Pistols for the first time.
See, that's where we agree on things.
Look at, I'm telling you, you know what? All these quote unquote punk rock kids out there, you can slam the Sex Pistols all you want. Fuck off. Because, look, no, the Sex Pistols are the start. I mean, I listen to the Sex Pistols, and all of a sudden I'm hearing them singing God Save the Queen, Fascist Regime.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the plates on the wall with the Queen, and I'm like, holy shit, they're like dissing the royal family. And my one uncle George, hated the royal family, hated the Queen, hated Margaret Thatcher. I was there in his house in Oxford, England, when Margaret Thatcher was ousted in 1990. And I mean, he went off and he was like, that's right, Maggie, what you got to say now, you blatant cow? I mean, he's just going off about her, you know, and I loved it. It was hilarious. So anyway, you know, I'm hearing somebody questioning what I thought was the norm. You know, it's like, oh, the Queen and all this kind of shit, right? And I'm like, no way. Wow, these guys. And I love the music. I really did. I think the Sex Pistols, you could say they were assembled. They were this, that. I don't give a shit. They sounded great. Yeah. You know what? They had a sound to them unlike anything else I'd ever heard.
At the time, yeah.
At that time, absolutely. And you know what? And not knowing at that time what I was listening to other than something that had a little angst to it. That was like, yeah, these guys kind of speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you know, I started listening to like all kinds of other stuff. I mean, it was on to, you know, New Order, Joy Division, Smiths, blah, 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 blah. And not knowing that it was them that started a whole musical revolution in England, what became.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, punk bands that were influenced off of them, you started hearing the Business sounding like the Sex Pistols. You started hearing Sham 6ix9ine. You started hearing all these, what became English punk.
Gang of Four, stuff like that.
Gang of Four, exactly. All this stuff. And then, you know, and it inspired, you know, what became the Manchester music scene. It inspired a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Sex Pistols inspired, you know, they're just inspirational. Way more inspirational, I think, than any band probably since, I'd say, the Beatles. In all honesty.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Whether you like them or not, whether you like the Beatles or not, I don't. You could say you don't like the Beatles, but you got to admit the fact they influenced.
A lot of people.
A lot of people.
A lot of music.
I mean, Ozzy's like, hey, if it wasn't, he wanted to be the fifth Beatle. He's like, if it wasn't for the Beatles,
I mean,
he wouldn't have gotten
any. I don't think we would have Black Sabbath.
You wouldn't.
If it wasn't for the fucking Beatles.
We wouldn't have. No, exactly. I mean, and so.
That's one of Ozzy's favorite bands. It is. Beatles. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, the influence of the Sex Pistols, you know, people can say, oh, the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, blah, blah, blah. I say, you know what, let's take it to Iggy Pop. To me, Iggy Pop.
Detroit.
Iggy Pop's the king of punk rock music.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, the Ramones saw Iggy Pop and were like, this guy, the Stooges, oh, shit.
Yes.
You know what, Sex Pistols, a lot of English bands saw Iggy Pop in the 70s and were like, what the hell?
Right.
Like, this guy's insane. This music is great. And it influenced. So, I mean.
But it's funny because the Stooges were heavily influenced by the Doors.
Yes, yeah, yeah, exactly,
like,
yeah.
We won a set of Doors and we're like, we can do that better.
Exactly.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I think Iggy Pop is better than Jim Morrison.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not a big Jim Morrison fan, but anyway. Yeah.
I've seen Iggy Pop at Tremont, and that was awesome.
Yeah, we saw him last year at Cruel World, and he was the headliner.
He was playing. He got really pissed off at the guy doing lights. He goes, "All right, motherfucker, turn all these lights on." He goes, "Turn on all the fucking house lights." So he did like the last five songs of his set with all the house lights on. Yeah. He told me, he's like, "Fuck, you fucking suck, dude."
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I was like, wow, we're watching Iggy Pop with all the lights on.
That's wild.
That was awesome.
Oh, he was, you know, he was great. Like, I loved, you know, I got a little teary-eyed because, you know, I'd never seen him before, but the importance of you know, of him, mm-hmm. you know.
And the Stooges, yes.
And the Stooges, yeah. Stooges going back to 1969, you know, the same year that Black Sabbath started. Yeah. So, you know, and it was that show was great because Susie came on. Susie Sue was mm-hmm. the headliner, and it was awesome seeing her because I'd been wanting to see her for years.
Never seen her.
Yeah. Oh God. And I don't think anybody will. I think she basically said, "Hey, you know, it took 15 years for them to get me out of retirement. I'm here tonight. You may not ever see me again, and you probably won't." I mean, no. So I was so grateful I got to see her. Because I'd always loved Susie and the Banshees. You know, it was one of those things where I went from loving Iron Maiden to the Sex Pistols and then on to pretty much a lot of softer music, you know, like the Smiths, The Cure,
we all
Sex Pistols.
Go through changes and phases in our music. Like, I was in the blues for a long time, and then, you know, I got back into punk again, and then, you know, and then I hear, like, Gangstar come on the radio, and then I'll listen to rap for a week.
Yeah.
Like, all right, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's the thing is, that's what I respect. I mean, even if I'm not into a certain genre of music, I don't disrespect it. Just because it's not for me, it doesn't mean it's not important to other people's lives.
Right. You're right.
Because,
absolutely.
You know what? What speaks for me doesn't speak for somebody else, and what somebody else is being spoken for doesn't mean that it, you know, that I shouldn't just at least respect the message that's being said.
Right.
So that's kind of like the background of my music. I mean, there's all kinds of music I love. There is. Yeah. I mean, I love punk. I love metal. I love country. I love old country, like Farron Young and Porter Wagoner. I love bluegrass. Bill Monroe, Stanley Brothers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Flat and Scruggs. I mean, I love bluegrass. I love old blues, like, you know, I mean, the old Robert Johnson stuff, old Charlie Poole type stuff.
I was just listening to Robert Johnson today, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
I've got a playlist that I made called The Spectrum, and it's funny because my friend Troy, he was over, I think, last Friday. He goes, "Man, what the fuck you call this playlist anyways?" I said, "It's Spectrum."
Yeah.
Because it's got, you know, it'll go from Robert Johnson to A Tribe Called Quest to The Clash and Bruce Springsteen and like four damn songs.
And that's awesome. You know what? Well, Ernie walked away.
I think Ernie went to go get a beer and a shot.
Okay. Well, when he comes back, I'm going to ask him this because, so there's a station out of Chicago called 93.1 XRT Radio Chicago. Okay. I think it's XRT. So, you know, when I was a teenager, the first I heard of it, I was driving down to Downers Grove, which is a little suburb area outside of Chicago. I was dating a girl at the time. Well, I mean, teenage love, you know, dating kind of thing. So I'm driving down there, and I pick up XRT Radio Chicago. And it was the craziest thing, because as I'm driving, Hank Williams Sr., you know, Set in the Woods on Fire or something like that was on, followed by like a Sex Pistols song, followed by like a psychedelic first song, followed by like some bluegrass song. I mean, it was just like this hodgepodge, and then a blues song, a jazz song, all over the board.
Was that a college
station? No, it's just a regular, it's a station out of Chicago.
Okay.
You know, they're kind of like more of a, like an independent station, you know, whatever. And I was completely blown away. I was completely blown. I'm like, what is this? Like stuff that I hadn't heard, I'd never heard before. And I'm like, oh, I got to find out what this is.
Yeah.
You know, and
back then it was harder to find out who you just heard because we didn't have
internet
Shazam or anything on our phones.
No, you couldn't find out. Yeah.
No.
You had to wait till they said who it was.
Right.
And then hope that your memory was going to, you know.
Write that shit down.
Write that shit down. Yeah. Next time I get to a gas station, I'm writing that shit down, you know, for my 87 cents a gallon gas.
Oh, God.
So Ernie, do you remember XRT Radio Chicago?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So I was just talking about how Radio Chicago had like this diverse.
Oh, thanks.
I don't know what it's like now. I haven't heard it in ages. But back when I was a teenager, of course, you know, we're talking 30 some years ago. The station played like, I mean, it would play old country. It'd play punk. It'd play alternative. I mean, rap. I mean, it had everything.
Yeah, it was all over the place. Yeah, it was kind of like pirate radio.
Yeah,
but that's
great.
They play whatever they wanted.
Living or being around a city like Chicago, because I guarantee you, back in the day in Charlotte, you wouldn't find that shit at all.
Yeah, probably
ain't
not.
No fucking way. I mean, I hate to knock Charlotte radio, but every time I turn on motherfucking 106.5, I hear a goddamn Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Well, it's
God Almighty, man.
Hey,
come on.
Even in Chicago,
yeah.
I mean, it was a big market, but there were still those very established radio stations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who played what they were told to play.
Well, there's stations like the major city markets. Like there's here it's called The Ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and so in Milwaukee, it's called The Drive.
That's our only independent station here in town, right?
But they're all linked.
Oh, are they?
Like, yeah, it's the same, like, sound of a motorcycle. Blah, blah, blah,
okay, yeah.
You know, 95.7.
There's still money behind that.
But they still play the same 100 songs
they do.
Over and over.
And that's the problem, all these stations like that.
Classic
like,
rock.
Yeah,
they have the same format. Like, I have in my garage, I have 99.7 The Fox.
Yep.
So, you know what? And I can only listen to it for so long, and I got to
change
it.
Hear... Because, Leonard Skinner so many
times.
Well,
you know, it's like, well, you hear Led Zeppelin.
Zeppelin. AC/DC.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's over and over. It's repetitive. And it's like the same songs. It's not even like something on a B-side.
Show us like a deep cut because Queen had a lot of cool songs besides their hits. Yeah.
You know, and that's it. Speaking of Queen, you know what? So another little tidbit about my upbringing. So my uncle and I shared bunk beds in the basement, right? In the house that I grew up in.
Yep.
So we moved from the house where he had the room up in the attic to another home that had a bedroom in the basement. And so there's a 16-year or 12-year gap between my uncle and I, right? Uh-huh. So when I was a younger boy, he would be heading out as a teenager, mm-hmm. like up, going out, hanging out with the guys, chasing after ladies, whatever he did, you know. So he would, you know, tuck me in at night, put on the 8-track headphones, and it was two albums. There was only two albums that he would put on. One, Kiss's Destroyer.
There you go.
And the other one was Queen's News of the World. That it would be one of those two albums, and that's what I would fall asleep to.
That's awesome.
That was pretty cool.
That's
awesome. You know, I didn't really care so much for the Kiss. I liked Kiss. I liked what I was hearing, but Queen was more appealing to me. You know, that's one of those things we were talking about before this. I didn't want to like touch on bands because I don't want to leave anybody out because so many bands are important. You know,
you are a staple in local bands here in town, though.
Well, you know, and I
whether you want to.
Tommy's has given so many chances.
Well, you know
to
what?
Local bands.
Well, that was kind of how we started. That was like our start in the music scene. We were the home for the misfits. You know, like all the bands that nobody would give the time of day to. Like every venue here would turn them away, and they're like, "Hey, nobody will book us. Nobody knows us." I'm like, "Oh, just come play here."
Yeah.
You know what? Because it's like, look, nobody knows who we are on the music scene end of things. You know, we were the old person's bar. You know, it was like, you know, the median age at the old Tommy's was probably, you know, 60. And, You know, I mean, it, seriously. So it was basically, it was the old timers bar. It was just a bunch of, you know, locals, you know, people that grew up. They were actually, those were real Charlatans. Like, they grew up in that area or in
the north. Which is very far and few now. Yeah, you don't meet many people from Charlotte.
No, I mean, these were people that grew up their whole lives here in the city that hung out the old Tommies. So nobody in the music scene knew who we were as a bar. And, you know, our bar, we didn't know the music scene. And it was these musicians that came to us and said, hey, would you give us a shot? Do you give us a place to play? Yeah. And I'm like, absolutely, do it. Because that back room was sitting there empty. You know, a friend of ours, Phil, he basically gave us this old PV head that had to be resoldered. The connections resoldered because they were all messed up. And
typical PV.
Yeah, difficult PV. And then this big, giant, wooden, boxed speaker amp that sat on, like, one of those high-top tables back there. And that was it. That was our sound stuff. It was second-hand, you know.
It was a small venue, though, so it was...
That room was tiny. It was, if I remember right, it was 11 feet wide by 28 feet long.
Yeah.
So basically, like, this little back area right here, that's all it was.
Yeah.
And we would pack 50 people in there, and it would be nothing but, like, it would be a sauna. It would be nothing but sweat, like, flying all over the place, and people just, it was great. I mean, people loved it, and they had a great time there, and they, you know, it started something really cool. And, you know, I never like putting the anything on me. You know, I'll take the blame for things. I never take the credit because I don't want to. Well, because you know why? Because it's not about me. Because this is a community. Like,
yeah, but it's a strong reflection off of you. One other thing I like to point out about Tommy's is that there's no racism. There's no judges.
No, hell no.
Anyone can come in here.
Absolutely, we've done it all.
Welcome.
We've done it all. I mean, LGBTQ, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, my good friends in the Latin community, they come here, they play. Last night we did La Bamba on the outside. I saw that, wall. You know, and you know, we had, you know, people who showed up that, you know, no hablas ingles, and it was great. You know, it's like speaking to them, and it's just, I loved all of it. It's like, and I love all of who we interact with.
Yeah.
You know, because people are people. You know, it's like, I've never cared.
Peoples is peoples.
You know what? My parents.
From the Muppets.
Sorry. My parents, you know, they brought us up not to be hateful people. And then sometimes they didn't. Sometimes my parents would scratch their head and like, you know, some of your girlfriends or some of your friends that you hang out with, they're a little odd. There's some strange, you know, you guys are some strange people. You know what?
That's the beauty of it.
And that was the beauty of it. And you know what? And it wasn't like they weren't like being hateful. They're just like, hey, we don't understand, you know, your scene and who you're hanging out with, because, you know, it was, my friends were a reflection, a cross section of, you know, just of people.
You know what though? I'm still that way. So my parents are coming in tomorrow for the whole weekend, and there are friends of mine that come by that look like me, but my parents know me. They don't know my friends.
Yeah.
And they're like, is this person going to leave soon? I'm like, why? Like, they're like, well, they've been here for like 6 hours. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, if you hung out more often, you realize this person's here all the time.
They're probably gonna pass out on the floor too. So,
it's all right, guys.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, you know what, you know, Tommy's Pub. That's why Tommy's is. It's not me. Like, I know it's like I may be the owner of it, but I inherited Tommy's Pub from somebody who was open to letting me do what I was trying to do, but I was only trying to do what other people had asked to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I didn't go out and I didn't like research bands and I wasn't pulling people. They came to us and said, hey.
You could have easily said, all right, I'm going to change Tommy's.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to change the image, but you didn't. So, yes, it is.
Well, because it's important. You. Because, you know, it's important to other people.
You and Stacy. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, one of those things where, you know, we had to close down. Jim said, I'm too old for this shit. I'm not doing this anymore. If you want to take this on, it's on you. You're going to have to, you know. And that's the thing. It's like, and So we were closed down for a year and a half, dealing with the city, trying to get this place opened up. But I was also trying to find money because, I, you know what? I don't come from money. I'm not one of these rich kids. I don't have any. So basically, I worked, you know, I worked at a couple other places around town, keeping shows going.
Yeah.
You know, booking shows. You know, the old places that I worked at, one was called, and they're both of them are gone now, which is weird because one of them was called the Dirty Hippie. And anyway, but so
I remember that.
Yeah. So I basically don't. Came in at the very, like, towards the end. Well, Kim, who owned it, said, "Hey, look, this place is going out of business. I'm shutting down. I've only got a few months. But would you come here and help sell all the stuff that I have? I got this big inventory of booze and beer, and I need it all gone, and I can't get musicians to come play here." And I said, "Okay, well, we're going to change this shit up. There's going to be no door. We're going to do free shows here. And you know what? We're just going to."
That's the other thing I was going to bring up. Shows here are free.
Well, they are, and you know what? And they are right
I
now.
I know you're talking about.
I've been talking about doing a cover.
Even if it's only $5, man.
And you know what? And I hate to do it because, you know, I love the whole thing. But you know what? I mean, I can't stay poor forever. You know what? Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Because, you know, I'm paying out of pocket. Like, bands here get paid out of, you know, it's 20% of our sales. You know, my markup isn't big.
No.
So you take the 20% out of our sales.
Yeah.
And it doesn't leave much. No. You know, there's nights where I pay a band out and I'm like, yeah, the band actually made way more than I did, like twice as much as I did. And that's fine. Because you know what? That's cool. You know what? I can still have a living. You know, we still are able to go and do the things that we love to do. You know, so our next trip to New York, it's like, it doesn't cost us like next to nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, we live on the cheap. Like, we travel on the cheap. We do everything on the cheap. Like, all of our shit's on the cheap.
Yeah.
Because this shit, if we did it the way, like, other people would do it, oh, yeah, it'd cost an arm and a leg. But we get to do it on the cheap. So that's the only reason why. People are like, oh, you're traveling all the time. And it's like, yeah, you know what? We travel because we do it on the cheap. You know, we're not made
out of Spirit Airlines.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Absolutely.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, Spirit Airlines. And then, we make, you know, some meals last, or we only eat one meal a day while we're, you know, rolling around the city checking out stuff.
You know, I'm the same way. It's funny because you could be at a festival and, you know, your step counter will tell you had 25,000 steps that day.
Yeah.
You've only eaten once, but you're not hungry. It's like, that's weird.
It is weird. Yeah. It is strange. And that's, it is a lot like that. And, But, you know, so the point of the free shows is, like, I love, you know, that's, like, my way of saying thank you to our community, you know, letting people come in. You don't have to pay. You know, we've had customers for some years who come in. They come into a free show. They hang out. They may or may not buy something. You know, it's like, you know what? It's cool. You know why? Because I believe in everything circular. You know, it all comes around.
Yeah.
You know, you know what?
Karma, man. It's karma.
It is karma. And you know, it's like, and I don't, it's funny, but you know, and Stacy sometimes scratches her head on this and just goes, oh, but I'm one of those, I don't worry about money. I never worry about money.
I'm the same damn way. I'm like, fuck it, dude.
And the reason why
it comes and goes.
It comes and goes. You know what? People who are wealthy worry about money.
Yeah.
When you grow up, you know, working class, and you grow up in a very blue collar background, you grow up with a mom who clipped coupons and, you know, tried to, you know, feed the family as inexpensively as possible. I didn't always get all the name brand stuff growing up. I didn't have, you know, I mean, I had a great upbringing. Don't get me wrong. My parents did my sister and I very, very well, but I understood they were, you know, more on the frugal side because he had to be. You know, because nothing was guaranteed, and nothing ever is guaranteed. And now that, you know, I've reached this age where it's like, I'm not worried about money. You know, that's not my main focus in life. My main focus is, do I enjoy doing what I do for a living? Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Do I feel fulfilled? Do I feel like I'm being a good community person? Hell yeah, I do. Absolutely. But even more importantly, I'm helping other people, and I love that. You know, look, at one time I was an drug and alcohol counselor. You know, I did that for a short bit of time. They fired me because I didn't play their games. It's true. I was for the Department of Corrections in Wisconsin. Yeah, they fired my ass because I didn't play the games with the guys that they did. I'm like, yeah. You know what? And I told the staff that I worked with, I said, you know what? Here's the honest to God truth. All you fuckers are more sick than the guys who are, you know, my clients, because you guys are more twisted in the head than they'll ever be.
Wow.
Because you guys are the ones that like to be on the power trip and mess these guys up. I'm like, my job is trying to get them rehabilitated back out in society, trusting people and on with their lives. Because I was one of those guys. You know, I was in and out of jail. I was in and out of the courtrooms. I mean, I was a messed up dude. And I understood these guys who were my clients because I understood what they were going through. You know what? And it was like, man, it seemed like everybody was out to get you. You know what? Like, you can never get a break. You could never. So that's why, like, you know, this day, you know, these days, it's like I appreciate everything I have. And I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot in life. I appreciate it, you know, because, you know, it could be gone at any time. And you
it's
know,
the it's the men tell it, make sure you're alive.
Yeah. Well,
make sure you do. I mean,
yeah, we live life.
Sitting at a fucking desk all day typing and then going home,
I tried that.
Making dinner.
I worked for a bank.
Going to bed and waking up, doing the same shit over and over.
Yeah.
No.
I worked for a bank, and I worked very shortly doing data entry back in the 90s. Man, I hated it. I quit. I said, fuck this shit. I said, I can't do this. This isn't me.
Even in my line of work, people are like, dude, you go out during the week and do shit? I'm like, fuck yeah. They're like, dude, you're not tired the next day? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted, but my life is not my job.
Yeah.
No, I got more to do. Then just wait till Saturday to go do something, man. No, I'm doing shit as often as I can.
Well, and don't get me wrong. Like, you know what? People who work, like, everybody who's got a job to do, if they enjoy doing it, hats off to them. I respect them because, you know what? They're doing what they are meant to do or what they want to do. You know, just because I don't enjoy working in an office, some people love it. And it's like, hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, because if that's your jam, that's your jam. Do it.
I would kill people if I worked in an office.
I'd be
fired with the first week. Yeah.
You know, I couldn't stay at my desk. That was my problem because I wanted to wander around and shoot shit with everybody and be a social butterfly. And I just realized that this isn't my thing. So I had to quit.
Yeah.
Well. But anyway, I think I've rambled enough, haven't I?
Yeah, all right, man. It's good.
Oh, this is great. No, thank you for...
I think we're going to wrap it up for the week, man.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Man, thank you so much, Jamie.
I mean, I could sit and I could probably talk for another two hours about all kinds of shit, you know? I could, you know? I mean, especially, I just got done, you know, you're talking about what you're drinking.
What was that?
Yeah. This is a Thai tea. It was Thai tea in a bottle. It's great. It's milk with tea and like some spices. Huh. And the spices are very similar to like tahini. I don't know if you know tahini.
I don't know.
Yeah, tahini is like a Mexican spice.
Okay.
And it's very similar to that in the bottle. And it's great. That's really good.
Is that stocked here at Tommy's?
No, unfortunately, it's not stocked here at Tommy's. You can get it at the Atlantic Farmers Market here in the Eastway Crossing Shopping Center.
Right down the block.
Yeah. I mean, I could, you know what?
You could shout
out to Open Door Studio. Shout out to Book Buyers, which used to be in Plaza Midwood, which is here now in the Eastway Crossing Shopping Center. Portofino's. Go see my friends Zaz and Simone at Taj Essentials. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of places in the shopping center that we love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
Vizard
a lot of
video.
There's a lot of cool. Wait. Vizard's here now, too?
Yeah, well, yeah, they've been here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they've been here. They moved here right before we moved in here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been coming here for, what, a year or so now? I didn't even know I was there.
Yeah, they're right down here. Yeah. And that's another thing really quick is small businesses around here, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's,
Support small businesses and local artists.
Right? Yeah, local artists, absolutely. Not just musicians, but, you know, physical artists, doing theater, you know, visual artists. Go support them all. Dancers. We host burlesque shows here. We've had belly dancing here. We've had all kinds of stuff. And I love all that. I love, you know what, and I step back. I love stepping back and letting people do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that is more fulfilling. I've never been one of those like, oh, look at me out front. Da, da, da. People have tried to push me out front, and I'm like, thanks. But I don't want that. I'd never wanted to be out front. I like stepping back, letting people do their thing, showing off their skills, and that's all about them. Yeah. I love that. I find more fulfillment in that than I ever would. It's just not in me. I'm just not, I don't, you know what?
I hear you.
Yeah.
I love being behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes, exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm a behind the scenes kind of guy.
I like making shit happen, but not being the focus of attention.
No one knows it was you, but we all know it was you.
Yeah, we know
it was you. Wasn't me.
But anyway, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Rock on.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, we will. Bye.
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 A huge shout out to our gracious host, Tommy's Pub. Located at 3124 East Wade Drive, Tommy's Pub is a small neighborhood bar that's big on music and community. Go to Tommy's Pub's Facebook page, where they regularly provide updates about upcoming events to include weekly open mic night, karaoke, and live music from some of the best up-and-coming bands in the Queen City. Thank you, Tommy's Pub, for hosting M Vibes Podcast. We have a lot of interesting episodes coming up about music's most interesting topics, but we want to hear from you and what episodes you'd like to hear. If you have an idea for anything we should talk about, email us at mbuyspodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by BWM Productions. If you like our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing us on your favorite listening platform. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at mbuyspodcast. Come on and join in the conversation.